From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Ahead of his inauguration, President-elect Joe Biden laid out an ambitious economic stimulus package, during which he made a forceful case for why the federal minimum wage ought to be $15 an hour. The move to fight for 15 gained traction years ago from labor groups in the face of stiff resistance. One of the earliest places where the minimum wage was successfully raised to $15 an hour was Seattle, Washington, where the newly elected openly socialist city council member Kshama Sawant campaigned for the hard-won victory. Now, those who have long viewed her presence on the city council as anathema to maintaining the status quo are pushing to recall the fiery activist and politician just a year after voters re-elected her. My guest is Emily MacArthur, campaign manager of the Kshama Solidarity Campaign. Welcome to the program, Emily.
Thank you so much for having me.
So first, tell me about this particular effort. We know that, of course, she has faced stiff resistance from big business, in particular Amazon, which she has singled out in her quest to make the world's wealthiest corporation actually pay its fair share in taxes. And so it has naturally made her the enemy of corporatists. Who is leading this recall effort against her?
Right. Yeah. As you said in your intro, right, Kshama is a socialist city council member in Seattle. She and I are both members of Socialist Alternative, a nationwide organization of economic and social justice activists. And yeah, as you also said, that she led her first election in 2013 on the fighting demand for a $15 an hour minimum wage, which she won within 6 months in office. And in 2020, there was a culmination of years of organizing, a clear call from Kshama on the need for an Amazon tax. And we won that tax in 2020 as well. And, you know, the example that Kshama Sawant has provided of the power and success of class struggle politics is completely unacceptable to big business and the right wing. They can't stand the challenge to their power that having a working class fighter like Kshama in office represents, and that she's continually stood with movements from tenant struggles to Black Lives Matter. And that's why they spent millions against her during her reelection campaign in 2019. And it's why they're prepared to spend millions this year trying to overturn the democratic will of the voters in Seattle with their racist right-wing recall campaign. This attack in Seattle on Kshama and on our movements, of course, fits into the broader context of attacks on the left. And if it succeeds, it will be used as a test case to attack progressives against the country. To give you a sense of how the right wing is targeting socialists and Black Lives Matter and others, we just got news yesterday that Breitbart News, a notorious digital tabloid written by and for the far right and co-owned by the climate change denying mega Trump donor Mercer family, just placed Councilmember Kshama Sawant on the list of 7 prominent Twitter accounts still active after promoting violence and disinformation. So, you know, they're trying to silence Kshama. They also placed Colin Kaepernick's Twitter account on that list. So it gives you kind of a sense of the big business affiliates and right-wing figures who are just highly motivated to get Kshama out of office and are backing this campaign.
So you mentioned that she had won re-election in 2019. In fact, we had spoken to her about it ahead of that election. And I remember it was a close race. It was a close race because there was a pretty well-funded, I mean, enormous propaganda effort and, you know, disinformation campaign funded by big business to ensure that she didn't get reelected. It was a nail biter of an election. She did get elected in spite of all those forces. So what is the technical basis on which this recall effort wants to remove her from office? I mean, if you look at their website, they cite a number of the charges that they're making against her that include disregarding City of Seattle employment and hiring rules, relinquishing authority of her office, misuse of City of Seattle council office resources to promote a ballot initiative, misuse of her official position in admitting hundreds of individuals illegally into City Hall after hours. And then the fourth one is using her official position as City Council member to lead a protest march to Mayor Jenny Durkan's private residence, whose location is in the state confidential program. So they're claiming this litany of charges. How do you respond?
The recall campaign has leveled four charges against Sharma and our Socialist Council office, and all of them are false. Washington State's recall law is undemocratic and unequally applied. I mean, generally, I think socialists do and should support the right of recall against corporate politicians who betray them. But here, the way that the law is written in Washington, it's well suited for retaliation against working people's representatives, in part because there's no requirement that the charges even be proven true. Sharma will be not provided any opportunity to defend herself in court against these dishonest claims. And two of the false charges against Sharma are retaliation for her consistent support of the Black Lives Matter movement. The ones that you cited about a march to City Hall and also the march to Mayor Durkan's house. These were clear demands by the movement. Sharma didn't lead the march to Jenny Durkan's house. It's this pretty malicious lie that I think gets intentionally repeated because they want to just single out a few leaders of the movement to reduce it down rather than millions of people participating in it, which was the truth, but just to a few leaders that they can then make an example out of. The recall effort against our council office is part of a nationwide backlash by the right wing and political establishment of, I think it's important to note, actually, both the Republican and Democratic parties against Black Lives Matter, socialists, and the left. Over 20 million people took part in the historic Black Lives Matter protests in the US last summer, making it the largest ever street protest movement in US history, which shows, the real power of these ideas, which is completely unacceptable and intimidating to the right wing, which is why they really want to make an example of Councilmember Sharma Sawant.
And of course, they don't overtly come out and say that, right? I mean, they don't come out and say, we want to recall her because she is part of grassroots movements, because she has defended immigrants from ICE, because she's active or was active with the Black Lives Matter movement, because she wants to tax Amazon. Saying that, or wants rent control in Seattle, saying that would expose what you say is the real agenda.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the original filing of the recall charges, there's actually one charge that the judge has already thrown out, which was accusing Sharma of promoting lawlessness. And I think that this charge actually really gets to the dog whistle racism that's at the heart of these charges. And I think we also can't ignore that this attack is happening in the context of just last week of us seeing this right-wing offensive against a Democratic election with Trump and his far-right supporters trying to overturn a Democratic election at a national level, right? I think that this right-wing emboldenment is absolutely connected.
And in fact, we are seeing some laughable efforts to claim that the Capitol rioters were Antifa, which is, I think part of this notion that the right-wing media in 2020 very strongly tried to claim that the Black Lives Matter movements were infiltrated by Antifa, who wreaked havoc and caused violence and mayhem, and that they just wanted law and order. It's really interesting to see to see all of that linkage happening now. And now we see our politicians sort of waking up to the dangers of the white supremacist movement and also embracing these bread and butter political and politically progressive issues like $15 an hour. Is this a vindication for your movement?
So there's a lot wrapped up in that question, right? Of I think a realization of the real danger that the right wing represents, and I think there's a twofold to that. Yeah, we are seeing pressure from below to act on this in some way. And as socialists, we see that what really builds and gives space to these right-wing ideas to grow is the material conditions that working class people find themselves in. So years of neoliberal policies led up by the Democrats and the Republicans has fomented space for a lot of this anger. So there is pressure and a demand for establishment Democrats, including Biden, to put forward some answer. And yeah, I was excited to see Biden's announcement of $15 an hour federal minimum wage. I mean, we needed that in 2016. We needed it before then. But it's good to have it now. And I definitely see that as a culmination not only of our movement here in Seattle, but of the fast food workers who have been going on strike and mobilizing for this demand for years. But at the same time, time, you know, that Biden announced the $15 an hour minimum wage, he also announced that he, after promising for weeks, was going to deliver $2,000 checks. Actually, it's only going to be $1,400 because, well, somehow that adds up to be enough. And I think that that really does show that we can't be complacent, that the left does need to be continually
And also the issue
organizing.
Of student debt, you know, it's now only going to be sort of a removing of $10,000 worth of student debt when he could simply sign an executive order to wipe out all government-held student debt.
Totally. And, you know, he's already indicated his willingness to compromise with Mitch McConnell. So it's not like this initial proposal is going to be what we get. This is his big proposal that he's already indicated he's willing to negotiate down from. So if they're feeling pressure from Mitch McConnell, the left needs to make clear what our demands are. And I mean, if you'll allow me, I think it's also important to outline that the Shama Solidarity campaign, which is the campaign that we've launched to fight against this recall campaign, you know, we're not just a defensive fight. We also have offensive demands, which include COVID relief paid for by, you know, locally here in Seattle, increasing the Amazon tax, as well as extending a winter eviction moratorium that Shama was able to win through her office all the way through 2021, rather than having this kind of ad hoc patchwork approach that we've seen from the state and federal level, which have really left renters in the lurch and has resulted in a lot of evictions during this period.
Tell me about the organizing around the Shama Solidarity campaign. I imagine that organizing at a time of a pandemic in person must have been challenging.
Shama Solidarity campaign, which, yeah, we've launched to fight this recall, is gaining momentum. You know, people should definitely follow our work through shamasolidarity.org. You know, we need the support of progressive socialists and the left everywhere. If you're watching this and it's making you angry to hear about this recall attempt, or you want to fight the far right, you know, we need you to get involved. Please check us out at shamasolidarity.org.
But and that's kshamasolidarity.org.
Thank you. Yeah. Just in just 3 months, you know, in, as you're saying, this really complex terrain of a COVID lockdown, mostly, we've had 2,300 people donate to our campaign, raising over $235,000. At the same time, we're up against, as I said, CEOs and developers who are lining up behind the recall campaign. And we know that they have bottomless pockets that they're prepared to utilize to get rid of this socialist thorn in their side. We've drawn in some important supporters, including Noam Chomsky, and also Sarah Nelson, the president of the Association of the Flight Attendants, who stood up to Trump and forced him to end his disastrous 2018 government shutdown with the threat of a strike of all airline workers. Our campaign has engaged 200 volunteers, either in socially distanced tabling earlier last fall, or phone banking and postering since the winter COVID spike, you know, which we've taken very seriously. And the reason we've had this impact is twofold, right? People know that they need bold left leaders like Shama, and they want to do their part in protecting that, right? They see whether it's Shama has stood with their union or has won a piece of tenant legislation that's impacted them, or the countless stories we've heard nationally or internationally about how something Shama won inspired a fight, you know, in their city or town. You know, they want to be part of that. But as I said, that, you know, we're not just a defensive campaign. We're putting out posters talking about the need for COVID relief and for extending the eviction moratorium. Yeah, people really see and are hungry for a fighting campaign, which I think is a really signature of Shama and Socialist Alternative, that it's not just based on kind of a personality or promises, but a vehicle for working people to fight for what they need.
And I'm wondering how much her presence on the city council in Seattle has pushed fellow city council members to start to be more progressive. Because, of course, once you're elected to office, no matter how small the office, there is a pretty serious pressure that you immediately face from the powers that benefit from the status quo to keep things the way they are or to move things rightward. And I imagine she and other city council members routinely face that pressure. But with this movement behind her, has she been able to push other members of the city council further to the left than if, you know, than if she wasn't there?
Absolutely. I mean, it's kind of impressive to look at, since Sharma has been in office. She's actually now the longest sitting council member in Seattle City Council, which I think is a certain testament to the drastic change that she's brought into City Hall. I think we've seen, prior to Sharma being on the council, there was an annual tradition where the entire city council would go on a retreat with the Chamber of Commerce to a local resort right before budget season. That practice ended the first year that Sharma was in office because she highlighted it and demonstrated how completely shameful that was, instead initiating during that time what she called a people's budget, which she said was which was a vehicle for fighting for funding for housing and for jobs and things that working class people need, rather than catering to and making time for big business interests. While there's this narrative that the right-wing media and the corporate media locally likes to echo that, you know, Sharma's not nice, you know, she doesn't kind of fit into business as usual politics. The actual record is for these victories, like the $15 an hour minimum wage or the Amazon tax, is that those were unanimous votes. So she didn't come in with kind of a vote counting approach of, you know, we won't bring this legislation until we have everyone we need on board, which I think, unfortunately, that's kind of a narrative that we saw around the Medicare for All vote, which is a real talking point around activists trying to pressure AOC and other members of the squad to bring forward a vote on Medicare for All on the floor in Congress. They said, oh, we have to wait until we have the votes. Sharma has a movement building strategy, right, where she says, do we have you know, activists, working class people, unions, other community organizations who are willing to go to bat and explain why this is so important, mobilize marches and rallies to demand these things, and really hold politicians' feet to the fire. And that is has across the board resulted in these big unanimous votes for progressive legislation that has really, I think, created a gold standard across the country that other cities and towns point to, whether it's 15 or a big business tax, which especially is needed right now.
Finally, tell me about where the recall effort stands. I understand that there's a court decision expected soon.
Yeah, so one of the sort of stages that the recall has to go through is going before the Washington State Supreme Court, and we're still waiting on that decision. As socialists with a sense of history, we haven't put any of our faith in, you know, that the courts are going to rule in our favor. You know, of course, the courts said that slavery was legal, that segregation was legal, and they've changed based on social pressure from below. So that's why we're already organizing, even though we're still waiting on this state Supreme Court decision, because we just have no confidence that they're just going to out of hand dismiss the charges, despite how spurious and completely false they are. And we know that our power comes from building movements and connecting with all of the people who have been involved in and organized alongside Sharma's office. So that's why we're already mobilizing and organizing them ahead of when the recall campaign can actively start collecting signatures, because they've already had countless op-eds in the corporate media kind of repeating their lies and their narrative. So we know that we can't just sit on our hands and wait.
Give out that website for the Solidarity campaign again.
ShemaSolidarity.org. So that's KSHAMA, solidarity.org.
We'll post a link to that from our website as well, Emily. Good luck to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Sonali.
My
Have a good
guest
day.
has been Emily MacArthur, campaign manager of the Sharma Solidarity Campaign. We've been discussing the effort to recall Seattle's Socialist City Council member. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for a daily newsletter. Also, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.